do some stretches or something. My body hurts so much.
Now's the time.
Pardon?
Now's the time.
No, not while the camera's on.
Hi, everybody. I'm Jim.
And I'm Ryan.
Welcome to the Concept Crucible Podcast. Today,
the skills edition.
We are using some skills.
Yeah. I realize I proposed this as a topic to Jim because this past weekend I went and recertified my first aid. And I also did my master's thesis on first aid as a skill. And I discussed the usefulness of first aid as being something that, I tried to argue, you know, everybody should learn, and the utility in having people, like the everyday people walking down the street, being able to do first aid. And then that got me thinking about this weekend, and then I'm thinking about podcast topics, and I'm like, Jim, like, there's a lot of skills that, you know, people ought to learn, or there are skills that were at one point thought to be essential that maybe have fallen out of favor. Or there are skills that people wish others learn, like the skills that parents wish children would learn, life skills.
The skills that children wish parents would learn.
Yeah. So whether or not you need to learn how to do laundry or cook or use technology or code or understand, you know, this or that, like it's an interesting topic. And so it's worth diving into.
My argument was that neither of us is in a position to dictate what skills a person should learn. On account of we can't establish criteria for it.
No.
I think we can agree that the world would probably be better off if more people or everyone was certified in first aid. That seems impossible to disagree with.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there's lots of things that the world would be better off with.
Mm-hmm.
And that is one of the things we're going to talk about today. But first, our icebreaker. Ryan, what is a skill that you wish that you had that you don't?
I think near the top of the list, and it speaks a little bit to us creating the podcast, is I wish that I had, maybe this will be a constellation of skills, but I wish I had the skill to build things. For example, I look up to my grandfather, and he worked as a mechanic and repair guy in the factories for a number of years, and he's very good with his hands. And he would be, I guess the best way to look at it is he would be like the proto life hack person, that he buys a bunch of things and is able to build something useful for himself out of it. And it's a skill that my uncle, who lives with him, has developed just through it. So for example, my grandfather has rigged up, and I don't think these are all, like, it's not like you bought this one giant kit from one company. I think these are pieces that he picked up and rewired and modded over time. But he's got a setup in the basement because they live out in the country, and whenever the power goes out, you always have a problem with flooding in the basement because the sump pump stops working. So he's got such a system set up that a generator automatically kicks on and keeps the sump pump going, and there is a backup to that, and there are sensors that he's rigged in there to trip if the sump pump is running but fails and things like that. And it's just because he knows how the, like, he can't program a computer per se, but he understands simple computer parts, and he understands pneumatics, and he understands controls and whatnot, and that he can envision what the final thing he wants it to do, and he can just build it. Now, again, that's a lot of different skills, like specific skill sets, but I wish I had a general, the general sense of building things, in whatever sub skills you would need to. So, you know, if I wanted to build a shelf, instead of going and buying a prefabricated IKEA one, I could envision how it would fit together, you know, and I could pick up the materials for it and build it myself, kind of deal. Just as
stay
an example.
Stay tuned for our build a bookshelf video. From scratch.
That could be an interesting idea, maybe for season two when we expand.
Yeah, that'd be a fun way to spend an afternoon.
The show. But that's I think that would be the skill that I wish I had. I wish I was a little bit handier.
Concept Crucible Podcast. Measure twice, cut once.
So how about you? What skill do you wish you had?
I wish I could play the saxophone.
That would be a good one.
So I played clarinet for a week in high school, and I was terrible at it, which is unsurprising. But I could never really get the hang of instruments with reeds.
Mm-hmm.
Seriously, reeds can get straight effed.
Yeah.
I could never quite blow the right way. And clarinet, I don't know why I thought clarinet would be cool, but I did. I was young.
Mm-hmm.
Please forgive me. But the other thing with saxophone is A, I play guitar, I play bass, I play a bit of ukulele, I play a bit of piano,
mm-hmm.
I sing, I do all kinds of stuff like that. But the thing that is those are all things like I can play guitar and sing, or I can play piano and sing, or I could play bass and sing, although that would be odd. But not impossible. But I don't do any solo stuff. Like it's really hard for me. I play rhythm guitar. I don't really play lead. Same with bass. Same with like piano. I don't know how to do a lot of piano solos. Let's get more technical and more technical than the skills I have with my meager piano skills. Mm-hmm. But saxophone is an instrument that, as someone who enjoys blues and jazz, is practically designed for solos.
Mm-hmm.
Like you can play it in rhythm and it sounds great, but you can also just bust it out in a solo that has an unforgettable style and looks super cool. Seriously, I have been wanting to learn the saxophone since I watched my first California Raisins video when I was a child. The saxophone raisin was so cool.
Is Bill Clinton your hero then?
No, Bill Clinton is not my hero, although he does play the saxophone. Lisa Simpson, also not my hero, but a saxophone player.
Falls much higher on the list.
Than Bill Clinton. Than Bill Clinton does. But yeah, it's more that as an instrument for soloing,
mm-hmm.
it would be a really cool one, and it really stands out. There are lots of other instruments I wish I would love to learn, but that is the first one I thought of.
Yeah, if I had to pick an instrument to learn, I'd probably want to learn violin, just because I like the sound of it, and I kind of look up to Sherlock Holmes a little bit.
I feel like that also. Today we've been exploring the differences between us, but again, violin is rigid, and the violin music is often rigid and rule based. Especially the sort of Holmesian style violin, which is classical violin.
Yeah.
And saxophone is blues and jazz. It's all improvisation.
Very much so. Yeah.
And fly by the seat of your pants.
Yeah.
Oh man, we're really different people, except really the same people. That never gets old.
So I think the right term would be complementary.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
We're wholly different and yet complementary.
Mm-hmm. That's why I cut everything cool that you say. but yeah, there are certainly, like I said, we're probably not in a position to dictate what skills everyone should have, partly because there are lots.
Mm-hmm.
But there are certainly skills that we wish everyone had.
Mm-hmm.
And yours was first aid.
Yeah, just... I mean, you could make all sorts of arguments why first aid would be important. I mean, just from a pure numbers game, the more people that you have that know it, the more likely it is that help is going to be available. Because usually when people think about first aid as something you need to learn, it's like, oh, I only need to know it if I'm never going to have access to a city or infrastructure, mm-hmm. or if I'm going to be out in the middle of nowhere. And that is true in Canada, for example, West Coast, where... the nearest hospital can be over an hour away by vehicle, or it could be a shorter route if you're more remote in a helicopter. And there, funny enough, I found when I was doing my master's work, is the percentage of people in the population who know first aid is higher in BC, where there's a foreseeable utility. It's a little bit harder to believe that, though, in a city like KW, where the target time for an ambulance response is 8 to 10 minutes on average. And they've been slowly trying to shave that time off. But if you, say, go back to my Ignite talk, and we'll put a link to it. In my Ignite talk, I talk about the urgent need to get CPR started as soon as possible when a person stops breathing. And that's just biological reasons. You know, you don't want a person's brain to be without oxygen for much longer than 4 minutes, then because then brain damage will start in. So, I mean, the human body, it's kind of funny. The human body is, it's kind of difficult to kill, which I know sounds kind of weird, but the body has, it's such a well-tuned machine in general that the machine, your body is pretty good about taking care of itself. Unless something is seriously wrong. So, I mean, you know, that's your body can manage itself. You know, it releases certain kinds of chemicals into your body, or your brain really has certain chemicals released in there, and it'll affect your body. So, for example, shock, which is something you learn in first aid, shock is an amazing thing because it keeps you alive up until it kills you, which doesn't make sense. But shock, the whole purpose of shock is it puts the body in a position where it's protecting its vital organs, and it will keep protecting the body, including shutting off parts of your body in order to keep you alive. So the first thing that shock does is it shunts valuable oxygenated blood away from your limbs and into your core, right? So, I mean, like, it basically, that's why you go pale and why you go cold and whatnot, is all the valuable oxygen is kept to your vital organs. And then the longer you go, if the whatever cause of shock doesn't go away, you know, your various organs will shut down in order to protect, you know, your heart, your lungs, your brain, and eventually.
This is why I always carry my teddy bear.
I know.
That way the shock goes away.
Learning first aid can sometimes be quite shocking in and of itself.
No, yeah, no, I can feel the blood leaving my extremities, and I want to go get my teddy bear.
So I guess maybe I've gone off on a little bit too much of a tangent, but so you can talk about the utility of learning first aid. But I sometimes think about it a little bit more in terms of, you know, and this explanation might appeal to you a little bit in terms of stakeholders and whatnot. But it's kind of like a golden rule thing that, you know, you do unto others, right? That you'd want done to yourself. Is if I was in a medical crisis and I needed help, I would really hope that somebody would be there to help me at my worst moments. And that I usually flip around on myself, and I want to make sure I'm in a position to be able to help somebody if they're at their worst moment, in medically at least, you know, because I'm terrible at empathizing, I suppose. But at the very least, I will do my best not to let you bleed to death kind of deal. So
hey, I appreciate that. If we ever have like a head injury on the podcast,
it'll be messy. We'll have to censor a lot of stuff out, actually.
Yeah.
So, that's first aid. I mean, there's other skills I think people, like, I wish people would know. And I'd even maybe go as far as to, like, creep into the, you know, you really should learn this. But first aid's definitely one that I think, you know, the laws are changing now to reflect that idea that more people need to learn it. And I think that it's just a good example of a skill that just the average person, it's a good idea to know it, even if you never use it. And that's the thing, is you take first aid hoping you never have to use it.
Yeah.
I mean, you'd have to have something a little bit wonky going on upstairs if you take first aid hoping that you're going to need to use it.
Like tomorrow, somebody's going to break a leg.
Yeah.
Just know it.
I mean, when I'm working at the bar, because I do first aid at the bar, and as a security guard, I'm required to have my first aid up to date. When I was in the campus response team, I always tried to hold on to the attitude that a good shift or a good day is when nobody gets hurt. So even if I am standing there for 4 hours and not have to take out one Band-Aid, it was a good shift. My boredom be damned, you know? So it's just a good thing to have in the back pocket, because, I mean, that's... Taleb talks about the black swan. You know, these are the things that the things that have the most impact often come with things that we didn't
expect to happen. Yeah, the things you never see coming.
Yeah. So, well, I don't know. I've talked a little bit. How about you? Do you have anything that you kind of wish people would learn?
Yes. I wish that I wanted to remark, I don't know that I tend not to go along with golden rule arguments.
Mm-hmm.
Though the first aid one is a really good one.
It's a good example, other than, you know, the sadomasochist.
But it seems like it would be a better role to do unto others as they would have done unto them.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than, but even then, it seems reasonable to conclude that other people would like you to administer first aid if you are qualified to do so.
Generally speaking, people don't want to die.
Yeah, I think that seems like a pretty
If you want to make it a little bit more universal, generally people don't want to suffer.
Yes.
That's probably the best way to encapsulate everybody is generally people don't want to suffer. First aid is a skill set that allows you to mitigate suffering.
Yep.
So, but anyway. So,
very utilitarian of you. Coming outside your box.
Well, I know. I got to peek out every once in a while and stay relevant.
Mine is a little more esoteric. But I think no less value. I wish that everyone knew how to play an instrument or do a performance in public. And like it's different than just playing an instrument. Playing an instrument often is a thing that makes you happy. Mm-hmm. But you know, or you and the people around you immediately, or unhappy. And as the case may be, becomes with practicing. Mm-hmm. But playing in public and playing for an audience is very different. Playing with other people. I did a video a couple months back. It'll be over Ryan's face and in the show notes about the things I learned at Nerdfest, which was my first time playing on a stage with a couple of other bands where I wasn't part of all the other bands, and the kinds of you know, the big rule is be the biggest fan of every other act. Mm-hmm. And it's a good rule for performance. I mean, I've done tons of performance, from public speaking to theater to juggling to magic to music to, you know, the occasional bit of comedy. Mm-hmm. That's my real skill I wish I had, was the ability to be funny on command. But that takes years and years of practice.
Yeah.
But no, like there's a kind of respect that you want to accord, mm-hmm, to people who are performing on the same stage as you. And you know, whether it's sharing space and sharing attention and that kind of thing. And I learned a lot of that from Copy Red Leader, who were super amazing about that. And, but, you know, it's also, it teaches you how to be a good audience member, because you start thinking about people on stages as people. In the same way that working in retail tends to make you a better customer. Mm. You can empathize with the people who are on a stage, and you stop regarding them as sort of commodities that spew forth music on command. And it changes the sort of feeling that you have in concerts and in performances. I mean, one of the things, I mean, you probably see a lot of this at karaoke. Mm-hmm. I mean, one of the things that I try and do is you cheer for every performance, and you don't, even if you're not cheering because it's good, or because you didn't enjoy it, you are cheering because you acknowledge that that person came out and did a thing that was hard. Mm-hmm. And acknowledging that helps them continue to do that. And that's it. Like if for no other reason, it helps them do things that are difficult. Because getting the first time on a stage, I've been playing guitar for, I'm 30. Oh God, I'm old. I'm not gonna say how old I am on the podcast, though I think we talked about it in our first podcast. But I've been playing guitar for about 16 years, and only in the last 3 years did I ever play for other people. And I was super self-conscious about it. I was not bad. You know, I was not incredible. I'm certainly no Frank Zappa, mm-hmm, but I was not bad. And I've definitely gotten a lot better since then. But I remember going to my first open mic, and it was at the KW Poetry Slam. They do an open mic before their slam night, and so most of them are people who are involved in spoken word or spoken word artists themselves, and so they were a really supportive and cool audience. Mm-hmm. because they understood how nervous I was as my knees shook. And I choked my way through a couple of songs. I think some Leonard Cohen and then a song about Cthulhu. But I was just terrified. And you know, my second open mic was easier. My third open mic was easier than that. And then I played some shows for charity events. And I've got an upcoming gig that I'm not allowed to talk about yet. But I do have an upcoming gig.
Ooh.
If I can talk about it by the time this cast actually comes out, I will put it in the show notes. But I'm not convinced that I'll be able to. But it's going to be cool. But yeah. It's a thing that... It's a skill that you learn that makes you happy, but it's also an atmosphere that teaches you a lot of things about people and about yourself. And it involves doing something that is hard. And even if you don't do it well, it's like climbing a mountain.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you suck at climbing that mountain, if you get to the top, you win. You still did it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, forget everything else. You made it. And if you were to climb that mountain again, you can take what you did and learn from it and do it and improve.
Mm-hmm.
But even if you never climb that mountain again, you still did it once. And so you understand, as a mountain climber, in some sense, what it is like to be a mountain climber. And so when you see other people climbing that mountain, you can see them sort of as equals and go, oh, okay. You know, I understand that sometimes they suck at climbing, but they're still getting to the top.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what matters. And that, I think, is it's a skill that comes very quickly from performing, and it's a skill that we recognize in performing because it is a thing that so many people fear and dread. Getting up in front of people and speaking is one thing, but you talk to people all the time.
Mm.
Getting up to people in front of people and doing a thing that most of them can't do, and that you're not like that you have practiced and you're not even sure yourself that you can really do, is another thing entirely. Like and trying to entertain them. But it is a thing that, as a society, we just totally fear.
Mm-hmm.
But it is, when done, super wonderful.
None can defend against it.
I don't know about that. I have certainly had sets that were easily defended against. But it is a thing that fundamentally changes the way you look at performers and performances.
Yeah.
I mean, in the same way that doing a podcast changes how I think about podcasters.
Yeah.
And making YouTube videos changes how I think about YouTubers.
Mm-hmm.
And because now I can't say that I have the inside track on that or anything like that, but I have a perspective from having done it that is not dissimilar to theirs.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the same challenges have occurred. I have climbed that mountain. They have also climbed that mountain.
Mm-hmm.
Many of them have done it better. But we both made it to the top.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess that calls into question, though, the distinction. I mean, your like first aid is useful.
Mm-hmm.
This doesn't seem very mine doesn't seem very useful. But I would argue that it's valuable. That was the big thing that came up in our pre-show, was usefulness versus value.
Yeah.
In skills. Because when we think of skills, we use the example of high school students.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when they're learning things in school, the usual argument / complaint that you hear from high school students is, I'm never going to use this ever again.
No. Actually, or a more relevant case for me, I don't know about you and your family, but a relevant case for me, especially if in the context of philosophy, is you say you study philosophy, and the first question is usually, okay, what are you going to do with that?
Yep.
So, I mean, whether or not you're in high school learning, I don't know, how to calculate amortization rates, you know, even though you would argue that would be useful because we all carry debt.
Yeah, amortization rates actually seems kind of useful. Yeah. I'm just going to go with trigonometry.
Trigonometry might be it, you know, a little bit of Sokotoa or anything like that, right? Like, at the time, you're learning it, and you don't see the end game in terms of, you know, where you're going to apply this knowledge. So whether or not you're in high school or, like I said, if you're in university and you're studying something that... doesn't have an immediate use, you know, or it's really hard to answer the question of what can you do with that. That typically is where people's thinking goes, is what is the utility? What is the value? How are you going to do something? How are you going to make money with this?
Mm-hmm.
It's an interesting concept that needs to be fleshed out there because, as you said, there are skills that are certainly useful and they're valued because they're useful. They may be valued for other reasons, but they're valued because they're useful. But then there are some skills that are valued regardless if a person finds it immediately useful.
Yeah, well, I mean, when you think about if we're measuring things entirely in the sort of gauge of usefulness, then the Mona Lisa is rather poor firewood.
Mm.
Like, and that's the thing is for me, I am biased because I have a lot of skills that I think are valuable but are not immediately useful. I mean, I juggle and do magic tricks, mm-hmm. and play instruments and make videos and things mm-hmm. like that. And those are probably questionably useful,
mm-hmm.
in comparison to, I can't even, first aid, for instance. First aid is a skill which is undeniably useful.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that skills like that are valuable, not just in the sense that they provide us with well-being,
mm-hmm.
but that they, they are useful because they serve no practical purpose. Like there is more to our lives than merely the practical purposes of the things that we do.
Mm-hmm.
That seems clear in part because when we focus only on the practical things, we often wind up being unhappy, or experiencing depression.
Mm-hmm.
Because I mean, when pressure exists for everything to be useful, then lots and lots of things become not useful. Most of the books on the shelf wouldn't qualify as useful. Some of them would. There's some nonfiction down the bottom,
mm-hmm.
But even then, like the study of, I think what was the example I used in the pre-show? Astronomy.
Mm-hmm.
Astronomy is not useful. Charlotte, my nerd night boss, she's amazing, but she will hate me for saying this, but it's true. Astronomy is not very useful.
You know, it's kind of funny. It's not useful now. But there was at one point when it was considered useful to study.
Mm-hmm.
Believe it or not, the ancient Greeks considered studying astronomy very
useful. Astronomy was very useful back then because you would navigate by the stars.
Well, not just that, but also Plato thought of it as teaching mathematics and geometry, which was important.
Yeah. But now you can just learn math.
Yeah.
But astronomy is a whole separate discipline from math now. And it's not useful. Like, the things that we learn about pulsars and supernovas and the millions and millions and millions of dollars that we spend on radio telescopes and space telescopes to look at stars, which by the time we are seeing them are ancient, does not in any way help anyone who is not an astronomer with their everyday life. There is no point at which a thing that we have learned from a supernova has helped someone build a car.
It's interesting because when you were talking about that, I immediately thought that another perfect example of that is knowledge on pop culture. Not knowing of culture, but knowing of like pop culture. Like, for example, knowing this or that celebrity or knowing things about them usually in no way
Oh, that stuff is super useful.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. No, knowing about pop culture helps you relate to people. Like, it helps you relate to the people around you, which is a useful thing to be able to do.
I have never once thought it to be useful.
No, but that it's partly because you don't hang out with those people.
I guess so.
But it, in the same way that watching the same television shows as people. Mm. I mean, it gives you a common context in which to operate. And it helps you communicate in ways that are meaningful. In the same way that you and I can talk about The Simpsons.
Well, I don't know, but I mean...
Or Power Rangers.
We all sleep under the same stars. We all have a common frame of reference.
I don't sleep under the same stars as people in the country, though. You look up from my balcony, you'll see barely anything.
No, you're still sleeping under the same stars.
Yeah, but
you're
I can't see them.
You're talking about light pollution. That's entirely different.
But the point being, my point is that it's not useful. We don't study astronomy because it's useful. We study astronomy because it's important. Mm. Pop culture knowledge is useful, but as I believe that the case that you're making is that it is not at all important, or it holds very little important. But I mean, it's the same with archaeology. Mm-hmm. We do archaeology and paleontology not because it is useful to understand, the details of past wars and, you know, how dinosaurs functioned and things like that. I mean, again, we're not gonna incur a lot of scientific advances or things like that out of paleontology. We do it because it matters. We do it because it's important, because it helps us understand our place. Mm-hmm. I mean, as much as astronomy teaches us about our place in space, archaeology and paleontology teach us about our place in time and how we exist in that context. These are things, you know, in the same way that theoretical physics, you know, occasionally does something that is revolutionary and commercializable, mm-hmm. but most of the time sort of discovers weird things of the universe when it is discovering things, which is not that often. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's so as, at least insofar as it makes, like, you know, regular media. But we don't do it because it's going to be useful. We do it because it matters, because it helps us understand things. And that in itself, while not useful, is valuable. So I mean, we do all sleep under the same stars, but we don't all think about them. Mm-hmm. Not nearly as much as often as we think about television.
Yeah, I suppose.
But, yeah, and I think that there are lots and lots of skills and disciplines that focus on things that are more are not so much useful as they are valuable. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't make music because it's useful. We make music because there are people who need to make music, and we listen to music because it is valuable. You know, and that's why we favor certain kinds of music rather than, say, there have been a bunch of studies done on music improving productivity and things like that, but we don't strictly we won't restrict ourselves to those kinds of music. We listen to music that we enjoy. We listen to music that inspires feelings in us, and that's going to differ based on mood and what kind of day we're having, and mm-hmm. you know, with the meaning of a specific song. Sort of a postmodernist when it comes to skills. The relationship is between the skill and the and the practitioner. Yeah. But...
because even things that are generally thought of as not being useful still has uses. Like, you can still use it for something. Just it's usually... it's usually within specific context. Like, astronomy is useful within a specific context and whatnot.
I don't think that usefulness is the way to cash that out, though.
Well, the part that I'm trying to get at is, and we were trying to rack our brains about this, is there any skill that is completely useless?
Yeah, and I think having thought about it and having reflected on it, no. Just sort of trivially, mm-hmm. it seems impossible. Mm-hmm. So, I mean...
You wouldn't develop... you wouldn't develop the concept of a skill around a certain set of abilities, knowledge, or doing something unless, like, it'd have to be completely... Like, if it was completely arbitrary, why would you build, like...
Well, I mean, so you even look at something like... I use the example of napping. Mm. which, but napping's, it's not really a skill. And I mean, like, we can split hairs on whether napping is a skill or not.
There are people in the SLC that have highly developed nap skills.
I was just gonna come up with a different example, which was meditation.
Yeah,
which is a discipline. It is a thing that you practice and do. I don't do any meditation, but I know enough people who do it to know that it's like people who do it and do it a lot take it very seriously and they work very hard at it. But it isn't a thing that is sort of outwardly useful. But no, I mean, my argument for there being no useless skills was purely that anything that is useful is valuable, and anything is going to be useful in a specific in some context. I mean, there exists an infinite number of contexts for skills to happen in. So even if my skill is playing three notes of Vivaldi on a violin, in a situation where I need to play the beginning of a Vivaldi tune, that is super useful.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the question we ask about skills usually is not whether or not they are useful, because that's sort of not an interesting question to ask about skills, but how broadly useful they are.
Mm-hmm.
And often that usefulness gets translated into how commercializable are they? That's when someone asks you what you're going to do with your degree, that's what they're really asking. They're not asking, you know, what are you going to do with your degree? I'm going to be smarter and happier, and I'm going to fall in love.
I'm going to change the world. Are you going to make any money?
Yeah, but even if you're not changing the world, even if you're just doing regular, like, life people things, I'm going to fall in love. I'm going to have a couple of kids. I'm going to live a life, and eventually I'm going to die. That is an unsatisfying answer to that question. Just so you're aware, people get really upset.
Well, yeah, but we're also missing the point that then it's not really what you learned or the skill that you have that brings that about. You know, like, it'd be like, okay, why'd you study philosophy? You know, I'm going to do all these things and, you know, with my life. It's like, well, why didn't you just learn engineering, do all that stuff, and make more money?
Yeah.
You know, so.
But it's, like I said, it's an unsatisfactory question. The answer, what are you going to do with that?
Mm-hmm.
Because the answer is you're going to do pretty much the same stuff, only you might be better off.
Mm-hmm.
And it maybe also takes into account what people consider better off.
Mm-hmm.
But in general, the question of usefulness, over value, to bring it back to first aid, which I think is the usefulness of first aid is undeniable.
Mm-hmm.
If you in any context where first aid is useful, first aid is extraordinarily useful.
Mm-hmm.
And there are lots of contexts. People are not going to stop being mortal anytime soon.
Mm-hmm.
Though my fingers are crossed. And first aid conveys value not just in those situations.
Mm-hmm.
But in any situation where there is potential for injury.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's why you have to have it as a security guard, right? It's not because someone will get hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And you will be there to administer to them. You will, or minister to them. You're not administering to them. But it's because you exist, during a security shift, you have 4 hours standing there. And in any time at those 4 hours, someone could get hurt.
Mm-hmm.
But even if no one gets hurt, it's still a valuable skill.
Mm-hmm.
Because what it operates on is the hypothetical.
Mm-hmm.
And it operates on this it's a hypothetical that holds true if you're at the mall or at a concert or at home building a bookshelf.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, seriously, if we build a bookshelf, I pretty much guarantee you somebody's going to get hurt. I'm not saying who it is, but somebody is going to get hurt.
We'll find out.
But no, it's not going to be me. I mean,
yeah.
I'm going to stay far away from that. But yeah, I mean, so it covers. It's the question isn't. It's interesting that we started out thinking about whether something is useful or whether something is valuable, but the question seems to be more sort of how broadly valuable or how broadly useful is it, at least for the questions of usefulness. I'm not convinced that applies to things that are valuable.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you think about novels, the notion that a novel, you know, there are great novels that don't appeal to very many people. Actually, or use the example of art, Van Gogh could barely sell a painting when he was alive. Only well after his death did people sort of take into and realize, look at his art and go, wow, this is actually really incredible. Mm-hmm. And there's lots of poppies and butterflies. But, and in that sense, for a while there, it was only valuable to a small amount of people. In fact, one person. But that was sort of because we hadn't understood its real value. And that's also because value is sort of intersubjective. Mm-hmm. I mean, value isn't a fixed thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of Van Gogh, and then also what we were starting off our pre-podcast conversation about is things that change over time. And actually, we touched a little bit about it in astronomy, that things will, over time, change in terms of usefulness and value. Mm-hmm. So, for example, novels and books and stuff were highly useful for educational purposes when, like, Gutenberg Press came out, especially when the Gutenberg Press came out, because you could disseminate information much easier than before, and education rates could go up further, right? And so, if I can find a link to it, I'll post it in the show notes, but there was either a podcast or an article that I read that was discussing where somebody said that they think that that the technological illiteracy that is going on today is going to be a huge detriment going forward, that people should learn how to have a little bit more technological literacy. Now, in remembering it for the podcast, I remember it more in terms of like coding or understanding programming language, but it could very well just be being able to use and interact with the technology. I'm not sure that would be cleared up in the original article or podcast, but it did get me thinking, like, are there things that we learn that really we don't need? And are there things that we should be learning that are emerging as things that we need to learn to better accommodate ourselves to the world that we find ourselves situated in? You know, because everybody seems to think that math and reading or language, those kinds of skills are perennial. Like, everybody should learn it. That's what we teach in school. That gives you the basics of which you allow yourself to be navigating the world.
Been away for thousands of years.
Yeah. But are there things now that are the present state of things has brought us to this point that we should be learning, you know? And I don't know. I don't know if I have an answer to that. I'm not ahead enough of the curve to know what is valuable to have because it's going to be useful.
I feel like this stuff. So I have a small list of things that I keep thinking about that would be valuable to have. But they while valuable to have, they are very difficult to teach. And in a setting like where you would learn math and English, presumably in school, mm-hmm. it would be impossible to teach. Mm-hmm. You can't teach responsibility in school. Being responsible is a really big part of everyone's life. Mm-hmm. I mean, as much as I like to occasionally complain about being an adult. Although I do rather enjoy being an adult. Mm-hmm. If you are the kind of adult that people think of as irresponsible, you're going to have a bad time. Like just flat out. No one is absolutely responsible in every sense, but there are, you know, the understanding of when to be responsible is a very important one to have. Mm-hmm. Because if you are an irresponsible adult, you are going to have a bad time. Mm-hmm. Having spent several years as an irresponsible adult, I understand. or stuff like financial management, mm-hmm. which is a really good thing to learn. Like not even the nitty gritty of, you know, interest and mortgages and all that, but just how to think about money mm-hmm. in a meaningful way. Really cool thing to learn. Really hard to teach, especially to 30 students who come from entirely different financial situations. Yeah. Like, who already have all these thoughts about money and what money is and what it means. And, like, it would be so impossible to teach to teach that to them, I mean, partly because you'd need to come up with something that respects all their situations. And how do you do that when you have, you know, somebody from the nicest part of town with somebody from the worst part? Like, they live entirely different lives. Money impacts them in entirely different ways. Mm-hmm. So it's sort of, and combine that with, I mean, people with different lifestyles, people from single parent homes or things like that, people who've recently, whose families have recently immigrated. Like, there's just, the context is too wide to fit in a classroom. Mm-hmm. But it would be a really cool thing to learn. Mm-hmm. And it would be really useful for people to learn earlier, and it would help them out forever. It would be useful, and it would be valuable, because it would help them be sort of better at being people and be happier people. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, a lot of the things about money aren't so much how to manage it as how not to be afraid to manage it. Mm-hmm. But regardless, we should probably wrap up with, what is your most valuable skill? The best one?
Mm-hmm. I would say the one that I use the most and has really come in handy is my ability to improvise and apply things or apply knowledge to new situations. Well, not necessarily new situations, but to apply previous experience into new things. You know, it's just, if I come up with something or come against something that's novel that I've never tried before, then I can, you know, look and like, okay, this reminds me of the time that I did this, or, you know what, let's try this out, let's test it. If it doesn't work, we can easily flip to something else. So I find I'm pretty good about that. And I attribute that to studying philosophy, that I was often forced to jump feet first into something that I didn't have a lot of experience with and try to make sense of it quickly and do something with it.
I feel like that's tied to your scholastic responsibility.
Yeah, but that was the way I got through undergrad and grad school. Like, it was a skill that I developed that I was able to push myself forward. Yeah. And I find that I get invited to do things because of a previous experience, mm-hmm. even though I don't have a direct understanding or direct experience of this new thing. So, for example, when Scoble asked me to MC for Project Macfrica.
Oh man, that was right? A couple years ago now.
Yeah, and it was less, in the end, it was less to do with emceeing and more to do with the karaoke at the end of the night. But at the same time, a friend of mine, he's getting married, and he asked me to emcee his Stag and Doe, right? And I mean, it's I have a little bit of experience with emceeing through the bar, but not in this context. It's something different. So I have enough knowledge that I can apply to it, that I can improvise my way through it. You know, you can fake it until you make it kind of deal.
Yeah.
Which is very virtue ethics of me, that even if you don't possess the virtue, you act as if you have the virtue.
And eventually one day you wake up and then you do. And then you keep acting that way anyway.
Yeah.
And mine is probably empathy. It is a thing that I spent a lot of time thinking about and a lot of time working on, and I will continue to spend a lot of time thinking about and practicing. But I recognize that I am more empathetic than I have been, and that is a thing that I value very much. Mm-hmm. I also recognize that I can still continue to be more empathetic because I am not as empathetic as I would like to be. Mm-hmm. It's interesting though, we both picked things as our best that are very broadly useful. Mm-hmm. I mean, the ability to adapt to new situations, you encounter new situations all the time, in the same way that the ability to empathize with people encounter, you know, is something that you can do with anybody anywhere. Mm-hmm. And often is necessary to do with anybody anywhere. So there might be some sort of tighter connotations for this use value thing. We might talk about skills again in season 2, mm-hmm. and press on this a bit more. But it's interesting because the skills that we wish we had,
yeah,
were much tighter. I mean, yours was pretty broad because it was just building stuff. But I mean, I just wanted to play the saxophone. Mm-hmm. I feel like I may have shorted myself on that. All right. If you have a cool skill, I want to hear about it.
Post a comment or a link to a video of you doing your skill. If it's, ooh, that would be especially cool. If it's performance-based. We want to see some performing skills.
Not if it's pornography.
No.
We don't want to get banned.
No, please don't.
Email those instead to Ryan.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Or leave a comment with what you think is your most valuable skill or your most useful or maybe what that means to you. Hmm. Either way, we will be back in 2 weeks. I'm Jim.
And I'm Ryan.
We're signing off.
Stay awesome. You can always just put an image, like just a simple black background with like no image available, and then just play the audio on top of it.
With a Foley sound of a car crash?
No, just the sound of me hitting my head.
It's going to go in my Foley archive.
All right.
Yeah, I have to start a Foley archive.
It's a useful thing to have.
It is if you make videos.